the commander of the National Socialist White People's Party, George Lincoln Rockwell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Raff. And let me first say how grateful I am for this opportunity to speak on the academic community. It's the only opportunity left to me in this country to speak in a way that the American people get to hear and judge me for themselves. In every other forum, every other place I attempt to speak out in the street, the people who loudest claim to love free speech and demand free speech for themselves usually insist on using physical violence to try to stop me from enjoying my free speech. And when I try to speak in the streets, I need troops. The only place where I can speak, I can't even hire a hall. When I hire a hall, they usually threaten the owner. There's bomb threats and so forth. So this is the last refuge of free speech left in the country. And I'm sorry to say it is usually accorded to me by the liberals. And I must confess, I admire their courage and their sincerity in granting this opportunity to me. I'm going to try not to abuse it. I think it is a privilege not only for me, but for the people and for the students to be able to judge for themselves directly what I have to say, rather than have somebody always telling you what it is that I am preaching. As an example of what I mean, about a year ago, you saw in Playboy magazine an article that purported to be a verbatim transcript of an interview that occurred with me. Well, that thing took place, the Playboy interview, over a period of 2 years, 4 different days over a period of 2 years, a tremendously long thing, would have filled up 2 or 3 magazines, which was then edited and put together into a fairly honest interview by a Negro interviewer named Alex Haley, who wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X. He was kind enough to send me the manuscript, and I had to confess it was pretty honest. Then it went to Chicago to a Jew by the name of Murray Fisher. And after that, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't recognize it when I saw it in the magazine. Everybody else that gets interviewed by Playboy is regularly given galley proofs so they can see what they're supposed to have said so they can correct them. I never got any galley proofs. But my point, ladies and gentlemen, is once again a man named Murray Fisher interpreted for you what I have to say. A couple of months ago in Esquire magazine, they had another article purporting to give you the lowdown on George Lincoln Rockwell, and once again the author was Fred Shapiro. Now, I wonder what you folks would think of an article called The Absolute Unbiased Truth About David Ben-Gurion by George Lincoln Rockwell. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, is what is not only done to me, but done to you. When you are denied the right to know exactly what somebody says, and you are told what that person says, and you are never allowed to hear that person, you can't judge honestly. You are being forced to prejudge that person, as many of you may have done before you came into here in this audience. Some of you here right now, before you have heard me, are already getting ready to protest and demonstrate. You are not willing to give me a hearing before you do it. You have prejudged me. You are prejudiced. And I think the people that are standing up... Now we know who's prejudiced here, and I bet these people are the very people that demonstrate for the freedom to protest the Vietnam War by burning American flags and so forth. And I can tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, I'm regularly arrested and regularly sent to jail. I just got 3 more months in Chicago this morning. Now I know who believes in putting people in jail for their ideas. I wonder what you think if they threw the communists in jail for their ideas. You people wouldn't applaud for that. I'm for that. And I can further tell you, if I catch anybody burning an American flag or any of my people, we're going to stop it by force. I don't give a damn what they do to us after it. We're not going to tolerate the burning of American flags. To get into the body of my speech, ladies and gentlemen, let me return to the theme that I was talking about, the mere fact that you are not ordinarily allowed to hear directly for yourselves what controversial speakers have to say. They are interpreted for you. Now, I think that this is very much akin to what is happening to our whole country, ladies and gentlemen. You are not allowed to see the charts by which to navigate truthfully. Let me ask you this. What would happen to the navigator of a great ship on the ocean who had to bring his ship into a new port into which he'd never gone if you gave him phony charts? What would happen if somebody substituted for the real charts forged charts which showed the rocks where the channel is and showed the channel where the rocks really are, what would he do to that ship? He'd pile it up on the rocks, and it wouldn't be his fault. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you young folks particularly are the navigators of this great ship of state of the United States. Particularly in the coming years, you will navigate it. You will make the decisions and the choices which will decide which way this ship will steer. And I am maintaining they are giving you phony charts. They're lying to you. They're misrepresenting. You've heard about managed news. You're the victims of suppressed news. They are not showing you where the rocks are, and the ship of state of the United States is piling up. And I think one of the best proofs of it in the world is the Vietnam War. I truly believe that we ought to stop communism every possible way. But if we're so damned anxious to stop communism, why don't we do it in Cuba, only 90 miles away? Why do we go 10,000 miles away to Vietnam and risk American lives in a war that we don't win? I can't understand that. I think we should win it. And I'm telling you, instead of winning it, they've got... Let me tell you what's going to happen to some of you young fellas here, perhaps. Some of you young fellas here, a year from tonight, as I speak here now, a year from tonight, some of you fellas may be over there drafted. And let me tell you what's the result of this forged charts and this liberalism that they've been teaching us and preaching to you, and they preach to me at Brown University. What's going to happen to you? In those Vietnam jungles, they got these tunnels. That's one of the favorite tricks of the Viet Cong. They build tunnels. And they hide down there. And in order to get them out, they're going to take you young men and give you a flashlight and a pistol and send you down in the tunnel with a pistol looking for these guys. They're waiting down there for you with their pistol in the dark. Now, ladies and gentlemen, American kids are getting killed doing this. All you need to flush those rats out of those tunnels, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get them out, is tear gas. You don't have to send kids down there. You can put tear gas. Do you know why we don't use tear gas? Because world opinion is against it. Tear gas is reserved in this country for the girls at the University of Mississippi. You can't use it on the enemies of our country that are killing American kids, that may kill some of you. They kill some of the people every night. You hear of the people in the Southland, the people from here, that are getting killed by these Viet Cong terrorists. And they won't let you fight them. They won't let you stop it. All they keep doing is temporizing because they won't tell you the truth. I see there's one American naval officer that had the guts to say, if we're going to fight over there, we ought to win. So they put him before a medical board to see if he's insane. That's exactly, the medical board just said, we can't find out that he's really insane, so they're going to find something else different. Here's a kid that's in the greatest tradition of the American spirit. He wants to win the war. And they put him up before a Navy medical board of admirals and so forth to see if he's nuts for wanting to save American lives by winning the war. That's the situation you've come to, ladies and gentlemen, because they are lying to us. They're lying to you. Tonight you have a chance. Whether you like me or not, you have given me the chance and the privilege of judging for yourselves what it is that I'm saying, not reading some Playboy article or Esquire article or prejudging like these people standing up before they've even heard what I have to say. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot, in a short period of time I have here tonight, I can't cover all the facets that I would like to cover. You have seen a film here, and by the way, this is an unprecedented experience for me. Where every school where I go to, they usually show films all right, but it's usually atrocity, horror pictures, propaganda pictures put out by the Jews that are supposed to get you all tear-stained, dripping tears, before you hear my speech. In this case, they've put on a propaganda film for my side. And I'm a little concerned because the speech that I have is not designed to be in the tradition of the sort of a speech that you would hear at a Nuremberg rally. I don't believe that would do any good for me to get up here and give a ranting speech on nationalism and racism and so forth, because it would be totally foreign to all your experience. It would make no contact. And what I'm trying to do tonight, ladies and gentlemen, in 40 or 30 or 40, 50 minutes that I have, I can't hope or expect to convert you and have people coming up here and asking me for an armband. I don't expect any such thing. The only thing that I can possibly hope to do, ladies and gentlemen, is to show you why I once, sitting out where you now sit, when I was at Brown University, I was almost a liberal. I just couldn't get down Eleanor Roosevelt. All the rest I tried to go along with. I was almost a liberal, and something changed me to the point where I now stand before you, not ashamedly, but proudly, as a man who bears the title of a Nazi, a National Socialist. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't hide it. I don't go around claiming I am something I'm not or I'm not something I am. I simply tell you what I am and what I believe,
and the differences, the reason I was almost a liberal in college and I now stand here as a Nazi isn't because I'm full of hate, it's because I discovered I was lied to. There were a lot of facts they hid from me. Shocking, enormous facts. Just absolutely paralyzed me when I found them out, and I've brought them, some of them, here to show you tonight. I'm going to prove to you here tonight that they are denying you some of the most basic charts that you need to navigate the perilous waters of the ship of state of the United States. They're not telling you what's going on. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot come here with a trunk full or a box full of documents, and incidentally, that's another point on the Playboy article. They continually said Rockwell never supplied the documents. Please remember, ladies and gentlemen, as we go over this speech, please remember what I am supplying here, and you remember that every one of these was supplied to Playboy. They just went out of hand and said he didn't supply the documents. What answer do I have? What do I do? They got a circulation of 8 million. What do I do in my little Rockwell report with a circulation of a few thousand? I have no way to answer it, so most people believe that I have no documents. You here tonight judge whether I have documents and whether they're shocking. I'm going to show them to you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't get impatient. Those of you who are standing up, you're probably getting tired. You'll get a lot more tired. The prejudiced people that are standing up are going to get a lot more tired because I think I'll speak extra long tonight so they can stand up. So stand up, fellas, and get wobbly knees. I think you will as you begin to hear some of these documents and see what. Oh, I guess I'm going to get a standing ovation. I think that's what we'll have to call it if it gets big enough here. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I could not possibly bring all the documents that I have would like to show you, nor can I project them on a screen. I can't have you read all of them. I can't pass them out to the audience. So here's what I'm going to do, because I know inevitably there's going to be somebody say, ho-ho, those aren't real documents. He's just waving a paper in the air. Well, here's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to make the same offer I've made at every college where I've been speaking all year long, for years. If anybody, standees or sitees or crawl-inners or whatever, flag burners or whatever they are, anybody who can prove that these documents are phony or don't exist can collect a reward of $1,000 from me simply by proving that they don't exist or that they're phony, that I'm lying. That's all you got to do. And as a matter of fact, in some cases it would be criminal libel. You can give me another jail sentence if these are phony. Get the DA and have me arrested for phony documents, for forgery. Nobody's ever done it or even tried to collect the reward because they're not phony. I'm going to present sincere, straight documents, and I think they'll shock you. Further, I'm going to go another step further. Since I cannot give them to you here, I'm going to make you the same offer I've been making all over the country. I invite you, I urge you, if you are going to say to yourselves, he's taking it out of context, it doesn't exist, you'd have to see the whole thing, we have printed every single one of these documents in its entirety, photostatically, not quoted it, but printed the whole thing by camera, so that you can see and read the whole business of anything I'm going to quote, and we're going to offer it to you free. Your name is not on any mailing list. We're not trying to get anything. I simply want to get the documents to anybody who has the guts to check them out. And all you have to do is write to me, George Lincoln Rockwell, Arlington, Virginia. That's all the address you need. They know where I am. Write to George Lincoln Rockwell, Arlington, Virginia, and you will receive the packet of every document that you will see and hear tonight. And I'm going to go another step further, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody, this is one that the standees will really enjoy. If anybody can prove, oh, they'd really love this if they could do it, but the fact that they haven't done it for all these years, so they haven't got much. If anybody can show, ladies and gentlemen, that I am misrepresenting and these documents don't exist, that there's anything phony about the whole presentation, I will fold up the American Nazi Party and go to work for Martin Luther King for nothing. Don't worry, I'll put on blackface before I do it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the first document that I'm going to show you is the one that shocked me perhaps the most. Here is a document which I couldn't possibly believe was on the level myself when I found it in the Library of Congress. That's where I got it. Here is the photostat of it right here in the form that you get it from us. This is one of the pamphlets with all the photostatic documents. This one is a full-page article from the London. You can cite it yourself and get it from your own library if you don't want to send it to me for it. Here's the citation. London Illustrated Sunday Herald, February 8, 1920, at the time of the Russian Revolution, or right after it. Page 5. Here is the full page available to you so you can see it all. Now, I can't read it all. I haven't got time. I'm going to take some selected portions. I'm going to first give you the title and what it's about. The title is Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people. And the author, ladies and gentlemen, is a man that there is no person in this audience can say is a bigot or a fascist or a Nazi. The author is the Right Honorable Winston S. Churchill. And in case somebody would say it's the Churchill who runs the garage, another Churchill that runs a garage down on 3rd Street, here's his picture, and you can judge whether it's the right Churchill or not. In this article, he says the Jewish people are dividing up into two groups. One group, he says, is for Zionism, and they want to take Palestine away from the Arabs who's had it for 2,000 years, and he thinks that's great. This is what Winston Churchill believed, and he says Zionism is good, and these are religious Jews, and we should give them Palestine. Well, so much for that. That's what he says up to here. But he says the other half of world Jewry is going another way. Here he talks about international Jews, and I would like to read you not George Wallace or Adolf Hitler or George Lincoln Rockwell. I would now like to read you the words of Winston Churchill on the Russian Revolution, ladies and gentlemen. Please listen carefully and see if you are not as shocked as I was, because you have never heard this sort of information. I never did. In violent opposition to all this Zionist sphere of Jewish effort rise the schemes of the international Jews. The adherents of this sinister confederacy are mostly men reared up among the unhappy populations of countries where Jews are persecuted on account of their race. And parenthetically, surely you all know the Jews were persecuted in Russia. He says, from the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and down to Trotsky in Russia, Bela Kuhn in Hungary, Rosa Luxemburg in Germany, and Emma Goldman in the United States, this worldwide, and this is Churchill's definition of communism, and I think it's pretty good. This worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstitution of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and impossible equality has been steadily growing. Now remember, he's talking about the international Jews. Now listen to this. Here's the shocker. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. And now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworlds of the great cities of Europe and America, not Russia, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads and have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous empire. Here was Winston Churchill indicating to me that all of these people he named, from Marx to Rosa Luxemburg, Bela Kuhn, were Jewish, and he says the Jewish Confederacy all over the world have seized the Russian people by the hair of their heads and become the masters of the Russian Empire. In other words, he says the Russian Revolution was not Russian. It was the capture of Russia by Jews who had been persecuted, rose up and took the country away. That's what he says right here in the article. Anybody who says, oh, send for it. Read the whole article. I got a few more paragraphs I'd like to read you. He says there is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of Bolshevism and the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international and, for the most part, atheistical Jews. It is a very great one and probably outweighs all others. With the notable exception of Lenin, the majority of the leading figures of the Russian Revolution are Jews. Moreover, the principal inspiration and driving power comes from the Jewish leaders. Thus, Chechen, a pure Russian, now listen to this carefully, because this is the system they use in the United States, this is the system they're using all over the world right now. When people say, why, there's no Jews running communism now, listen to what Churchill says. Thus, Chechen, a pure Russian, is eclipsed by his nominal subordinate, Litvinov. And the influence of Russians like Bukharin or Lunacharsky cannot be compared with the power of Trotsky or Zinoviev. In other words, he says, at the top level, they have a Gentile who is a front. And right under him, they have the Jewish leader who is the real driving power. That's not Rockwell speaking. That's what Churchill says in this article. Remember the two names he says, the two guys that are the real driving power, Litvinov and Trotsky. That's what he says in Article 1. Now I'm going to show you another document, this time from the Jews, not from Mr. Churchill, but from the Jews themselves. And I can't tell you how shocked I was when I began to follow this up. I started checking on Mr. Trotsky and on Mr. Litvinov to see who are these guys. So there's a book put out by the Jews called Who's Who in World Jewry. I'm sorry, Who's Who in American Jewry. That's the title, Who's Who in American Jewry. I have here a reduction of the title page. Who's Who in American Jewry. Now, remember, haven't you folks always been told, and didn't you believe, as I did until I was over 30 years old, I thought Jews were just a religious group. If you are a Jew, you believe in Judaism. If you abandon Judaism and deny it and become an atheist, a fanatical atheist, and attack religion, you certainly couldn't be a Jew if Jews are just a religious group, could you? This is what the Jews told me. They said there can be no such thing as a communist Jew because Jews are a religious group, and if you become a communist, you're no longer Jew. That's what the ADL says, and I believed it. So the Jews put out a book called Who's Who in American Jewry, and who do they list who is his picture right here? But Leon Trotsky, and we find out his name is Bronstein, and he was a Jewish tailor from the Lower East Side of New York before he went over there to Russia to run the revolution. There's one of them. Remember the other guy we said, Litvinov? Imagine how shocked I was to discover it. Litvinov, that sounds like a good old Russian name, doesn't it? Well, it turns out that he's one of the tribe. His name is Finkelstein. Here he is, put out. Now, listen, this isn't stuff from me. This is stuff from the Jews, published by the Jews as a directory of great Jews, American Jews, and they list the two leaders of Russia as American Jews. Doesn't that surprise you? It did me. Now, the next one, ladies and gentlemen, here's another one. You may say, well, that was quite a while back, because that thing was published in 1939. Here's one that just came out 2 years ago. It cost me $35 to get it, but boy, was it worth it. It's called Who's Who in World Jewry. Now, this is the real authoritative list of the real top Hebrews. Let me give you the list, ladies and gentlemen, of the Jewish organizations. I can't read them all. I'll pick a few out of this. About 100 organizations listed here as the sponsors of this authoritative list. It says of the great and biographical dictionary of outstanding and noble Jews of the world. Let me give you some of the people: the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Historical Society, Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, the Hillel Foundation. I bet you got one right here. Ask them. Canadian Jewish Congress, Central Conference of American Rabbis, Jewish Theological Seminary, and there's about 100 of them here. They say this is an authoritative book, a list of Jews. On page 29, ladies and gentlemen, what do we find in the authoritative list of Jews? Herbert Aptheker, the chief theoretician of the Communist Party. His daughter Bettina runs the riots on the hour and the half hour out there at Berkeley. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is the proof from their own pages, from the Jews themselves, that they consider a communist, atheist Jew as one of the tribe, as one of the boys, even though he's attacking religion. I didn't put him in there. Can you imagine a book called A Directory of Great Christians, listing George Lincoln Rockwell as one of us? Or Adolf Hitler? Not yet, not for a while. You will see the day that that will be in. But right now, everybody's too scared. People are scared of these Jews, so they don't do it. But the day is going to come when we'll list our good boys in there, too. Now, before I go on from this subject of communism and Jews, I want to show you another document here. Here is a document, these little ribbons. I've left this ribbon outside of the glassine cover so you can see what it is. This one is a document obtained from the U.S. archivist, Wayne C. Grover, signed, sealed by the United States. To fake this up would be forgery. It would be a prison offense. Here is an intelligence report by your G2, by your intelligence people, right after the Russian Revolution, to the American government and to the War Department and the President as to the nature of the Russian Revolution. Remember, this is one of the documents you can get from me and study for yourself and see whether I'm misquoting it or whether it's misrepresenting. I would like to read one section here where it says the composition of the first Russian government, the commissars, and the first Soviet. Here is what the intelligence report shows it was made up of. This is the government of Russia right after the revolution. It was made up of 2 Negroes, 13 Russians, 15 Chinamen, 22 Armenians, and more than 300 Jews. Does that sound like a Russian government to you? Now, in case that isn't clear enough for you, this guy who was at the time, this has been declassified, but when he wrote this, this was a classified document, so the guy let himself go a little bit. Listen to what he says. He says, it is probably unwise to say this loudly in the United States, but the Bolshevik movement is and has been since its beginning guided and controlled by Russian Jews of the greasiest type. Now, can you possibly have any doubt what the guy is saying, what he means, that this is the Russian Revolution wasn't Russian, it was Jewish? But to tell you that, ladies and gentlemen, I got to face violence and force and all sorts of insults and derogation in order to tell you, even if it's wrong, don't you think the right way to deal with this thing is in the form of a formal debate? Don't you think there ought to be a confrontation? If I'm wrong, don't you think the Anti-Defamation League or the Hillel Foundation should supply an expert so that he and I could stand before you and we both present our sides and you judge? They won't do it. They never have done it. They keep saying, we won't degrade ourselves with arguing with Rockwell. I don't wonder. When I've got documents like their own Who's Who and World Jewry, what are they going to say? That's why they tell you they wouldn't degrade themselves to come up here. They won't use the old-fashioned American method of confrontation. I accuse them, and they keep calling me names. They won't discuss the facts. All they keep doing is trying to punch me in the nose, calling me an MF-er like out front here and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me from preaching what's in here because he threatens to punch me in the nose or because he calls me a dirty name. I'm not convinced because somebody has the brilliance to be able to say MF-er to me that he's a genius and has better facts than I do. If that's true, all these guys down here in Watts are the smartest guys in the country because they use that word all day long. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you another element to show you what these people are doing, why they can get away with keeping facts like this away from you. They have a little secret world of their own. They get away with murder that you couldn't do. Now, let me ask you this. This is a hypothetical question. I'm now going to say something that is not true as a hypothesis and ask you what you would think of it. What would you think, folks, if I told you that the Catholics got a deal going in this country, a real profitable deal, and every factory that makes food has to pay a priest to hang around the factory with his feet up on a desk, and he gets a big salary in order to put a little C on all the food to certify that it's pure Catholic, and that you all have to pay for it? Boy, you'd say that's an outrage. Why, look at this separation of church and state. What do these people mean, making us pay for their religious services? Well, now let me tell you, the tribe is doing exactly that to you. They're giving you a good financial screwing, and you don't know it. They never tell you. I'm going to show you how bad it is. Here is a directory called Kosher Products Directory. Some of you in the front row may be able to see it. It's got a circle with a big U in it. Now, this U is called a hexer. And do you know what a hexer stands for? It's the mark of the Jews. It's put out by the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America. And this hexer shows that anybody in this directory has paid the Jews money, cash, in order to get that thing on their product. And where do you think the cash comes from? You pay it. They have two groups. Now, when you get out of here, if you think I'm lying or misrepresenting, you have only one thing to do. It's real easy to do. You have simply to go home, look on the shelf where you keep any groceries, and look for two things, either a K, which means kosher, or this U, which means Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, and you'll find it hidden away on the label of most of your food products, even soap powder, detergents, even antifreeze is kosher. Now, they list it here. You're paying extra, a mil or a penny or something extra for every piece of food. This is a racket, ladies and gentlemen, and there's a Jewish newsletter put out by a William Zuckerman. Here it is here. This is, again, available from us for you to read it all. William Zuckerman's letter, he says to his fellow Jews, now, of course, whoever heard of the Jewish newsletter, we don't read it. Of course, I do, but you people don't, the goy, as they call it, the sheep that don't study what's going on. You don't study what's going on. But they say to each other, boys, we got to get a little cooler about this thing. They're catching on. Let me show you what they have down here. This is under the heading, The Kosher Racket. And under this heading, which you can get for me and read, you will find out that a rabbi in Cleveland, Ohio, sued the Coca-Cola company for one summer's blessing of the Coca-Cola. And he collected $30,000. That's pretty good pay. I don't know what the rabbi had to do to each bottle. Maybe snip a little off the end of the bottle as they went through the line in order to make it kosher. My point, ladies and gentlemen, is multiply the Coca-Cola in just Cleveland by all over the country, by all the other drinks, by all the other seasons, by the year after year after year that's gone on since then, and the Jews come up with a figure, and incidentally, it's a very ominous figure, of $6 million a year that they're getting. That's what they say. You're paying them $6 million a year to eat kosher food. Would you pay $6 million a year to eat Catholic food or Buddhist food? Do you think that any religion has the right to impose its cost on the whole population the way they do? And if you don't put that, if the, any manufacturer doesn't put the symbol on, he doesn't have much luck. He can't get his advertising, just like me, he can't be heard. His product won't go. They say this right here in their own newsletter, and don't anybody let anybody out there say Rockwell is just ranting and raving. You get the document as I did and study it and see if the Jews themselves admit it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to the heart of this matter and show you how they operate. How they operate to keep you in ignorance, how they issue these false charts and lie to you, and why, how it works. Here we caught them dead red of the act. I got a letter here this time from the secret channels of the Jews. Well, this was hard to get, but we've also printed it, and if it's a lie, it's from the Anti-Defamation League, who doesn't care for me too much. They would love to bag me for this one. If it's a forgery, they'd have me every time I speak, they'd get me. Here I am again, boys. If you want to bag me, and this is a fake, just go ahead. Here is a letter from the Jews, the Anti-Defamation League, to publishers around America. And I want to show you what they have done about a book they don't like. And before I do it, I'm going to have to make a confession. In Germany, they burned books. And this was not only wrong, in my opinion, it was stupid. Absolutely stupid. It didn't even if it was right, it didn't accomplish the purpose they want. If you want to get a book read, the best way is to get it banned in Boston as too dirty, or burn it, or have the Kennedys sue to prevent publication. This is what you do to get a book read. The Jews aren't so stupid. Let me tell you what this Jewish letter to publisher says. Scribner's and Sons have just published a book by Madison Grant entitled The Conquest of a Continent. It is extremely antagonistic to Jewish interests, emphasized throughout as the Nordic superiority theory, and the utter negation of any melting pot philosophy with regard to America. And incidentally, there's not a word against the Jews in this book. That's what they don't like. They don't like it that this guy says we shouldn't be a melting pot, we should keep racially pure. Well, now, up to this point, I'll back the right of the Jews to write this. Everybody has a right to say this is a vile book and you shouldn't read it, or we don't like it. And I'd fight for anybody's right to do that. But that's not what they did. Listen to what they did to that book. We are interested in stifling the sale of this book. And they did, ladies and gentlemen. You can't get it except that it's a rare book. You won't find The Conquest of a Continent. The Jews don't want you to read it, so you don't see it. You just see their side of everything. The racial question, all you see is that the Negroes are wonderful, Jews are even better, and if there's anything awful, it's a white Southern Christian Protestant. He's no good. This is the only side you ever see. You never see the other side because of this book stifling. And listen how they do it here. We believe that this stifling can best be accomplished by refusing to be stampeded into giving the book any publicity at all. Every review or even every public criticism of the book of this character brings it to the attention of many who would otherwise never know of the existence of the book. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've written a book, and maybe it's the worst book in the world. Maybe it really is. But don't you think you ought to have a chance to know that? Do you think the Jews, as they have, should make it impossible for you to pick that book up in a bookstore and look at it and say, that stinks and I won't buy it? You ought to have that right. You do have that right by the American Constitution to judge for yourselves what you want to read. The Jews have taken it away from you. They stifle books. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of books are not allowed to be published because the Jewish businessmen, who are geniuses, I won't deny that, have risen to the top, and I won't deny their right to do that, but then they've abused their power. They've got enormous power of wealth, and they use this power of wealth to tell anybody, any bookseller, if you carry George Lincoln Rockwell's book, you can't get any other books to sell. Who's going to go out of business to sell my one book, or The Conquest of a Continent, or any other book? George Wallace wrote a book. I think he'd have a hard time getting in a lot of bookstores. Maybe you hate George Wallace. Well, if Gus Hall wrote a book, let's use the other side. I think Gus Hall's book should be available so you can pick it up and decide. These Jews don't have the right to tell you you can't read what they don't like, and they do it. And that's what I'm here tonight to tell you. And in order to do it, I have to face force, violence, arrest, all sorts of harassments that the same people that are doing this don't do to the Vietnam Protest Committee. They don't do it to the flag burners. They just do it to anti-communists. I understand poor Mr. Welch is going to speak here tomorrow. And God help him. This could be a very wild and woolly audience with Mr. Welch, because he's not rough and tough. I gave up being a conservative years ago because I discovered you can't fight these people nice. They're not nice. They yell MF-er at you. And out in the street, I just soon yell it right back and do more than that besides. Anybody who wants to punch me in the nose, the only way to deal with him is punch him harder until he understands that you're not going to tolerate anymore this punching. And if you don't do that, he's going to stomp you. In World War II, ladies and gentlemen, I was taught to hate. If hate is a bad thing, then Franklin D. Roosevelt is the wickedest man in history because he taught millions of Americans to hate Germans and to hate Japs, and we did. And we beat the hell out of them because we hated them. We killed them as fast as we could. I was one of them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the enemy is communism, and they're preaching love. That's all you hear from these lovely people, these standees here. Love. And you're getting whipped. Purpose of preaching hate in that war was because the enemy then had his finger on communism. So they taught you to hate them and kill them. Now the enemy, or so-called enemy, we're supposed to have as an enemy, which we won't even declare in the Congress, is communism, and they're preaching love and coexistence. Can't you see the picture? Just like the book stifling. In one instance, they preach hate and fight, and we won. Now they want us to lose, and they're preaching love, and we're losing. How stupid can the American people be, and how long will they continue it? And I maintain all it will take to wake them up is what you good people are allowing me to do tonight. Let people tell you the truth and let you judge it for yourselves. The people are smart enough to figure it out. The minute you let them see these stifled books, they'll see there's another side. The minute they hear these stifled speakers like myself, they'll see that I'm not a raging lunatic. They'll see that I've got some facts behind it. Well, let me ask you something, ladies. Well, I won't put it in the form of a question. I'll make it a statement. Tonight, I have done a psychological trick to you. You may call it a dirty trick. I think it's a good thing to have done. I have now set every one of you in this audience so you have changed forever, whether you realize it or not. I'm going to point out how. When I got back from World War II, thinking that I had saved the world from any more terrorism and tyranny and so forth, since then there's been 18 people convicted of treason to this great country. 17 of them have been Jews like the Rosenbergs. Harry Gold, Brothman, Moskowitz, Harry Gold, and the whole parade of Jews. After this speech tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you know what's going to happen to you as has happened to me once? From now on, whenever they haul out one of these little communist spies, you'll notice the length of the nose. You'll never forget it. When they tell you that the names of the new English spies are the Krogers, you'll notice that it says in the paper in parenthesis, Cohen. You'll notice that when it says up in Canada they catch Harry Rose and Sam Carr as the leaders of communism in Canada, it turns out Rose's name is Rosenberg and Carr's real name is Cohen. Just like Litvinov and Trotsky, they changed their names. But you'll notice it from now on, you can't help it. And ladies and gentlemen, once you notice the truth, you never can forget it. It's possible to convert from a lie to the truth. But I never heard of anybody, once having found the truth, going back to a lie. You'll never do it. No matter what you think of me tonight, no matter what you think of this speech, from now on you'll start noticing every time you see a communist group, you will begin to notice what the leaders look like and who they are. And you will discover they're members of the tribe. Who do you think is the head of a communist organization in this country that is so red, so leftist, and so traitorous that they call the Communist Party of Gus Hall a bunch of squares? Progressive Labor is the real red-hot communist organization in this country, and the leader of it is a man named Jake Rosen. Does that sound Swedish to you? Every time I look around, wherever you go, wherever these communist operations are going, here are these Jewish people leading them. Now, those Jews are in the audience who are saying, oh, Rockwell, you ought to die, instead of cussing me for telling the audience this, you ought to be saying those Jews are traitors to our race. If there's loyal Jews in this audience, and I'm sure there are, you should be deploring this as good Italians deplore the mafia. You don't get punched in the nose for saying the mafia is Sicilian. It is. But you do get punched in the nose by these Jews for saying communism is Jewish. It is. I'm not saying all Jews are communists or all communists are Jews. That would be wicked and stupid. Just as it would be stupid to say because the mafia is Sicilian, it would be stupid and wicked to say all Sicilians are gangsters or all gangsters are Sicilians. But you all still know, in spite of those facts being true, it's still true that the mafia is a Sicilian operation. Communism, from Karl Marx, who was a Jew, Engels, LaSalle, right straight through all of these people that I've read, all through our spies now, right up to Leo Rosen, is a Jewish operation. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know that, you are not going to be able to deal with it realistically. You can't, because the Jews are just be able to stifle everything about it that they don't want you to hear. And that's what's happened to me, ladies. What happened to me, they say I'm a hater and a bigot. Well, I don't see how it's bigotry when I find out that they've lied to me and I don't like it. Let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Have you heard in your history courses in college or high school, did anybody ever mention the possibility that the Russian Revolution wasn't Russian, that it was Jewish? Maybe it's not true, but don't you think that such a strong possibility should be mentioned to you so you could think about it? But they cover it up. If you mention it every once in a while when I'm at a college and there's a history professor up here, I ask them, why don't you mention that? And if they try to deny it, I beat them down with the facts. But they don't do it in the classroom. They don't tell you. It's not in your textbooks. And I think that's wrong. And incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, if you want it specially, when you send away, we put out a special reader's guide of suppressed books. Ask for it and have a ball. Watch the Jews suffer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me show you. I'm going to wind this up by showing you what this is leading to, what is happening to your country. I haven't got half the time. I'd like to give you the total picture of all the horrors that this has led up to, but I haven't got the time. I can only tell you that they have lied to you so much that when you start hearing what's actually and really happening in your country, you know what I usually find in most audiences? They giggle. I'm going to give you an example. See, drop down here. I want to show you something that should shock you. You should just almost be panic-stricken, because when you finally realize the import of this thing, you will be. And I get many letters from every audience that they are. But usually when I first show this little exhibit to an audience, they titter, because it just doesn't seem possible. And I agree with you. But it's true. Now, I'm going to show you this document here. This is a thing called the Crusader, put out in Cuba by a man named Robert Williams, the ex-head of the NAACP in Monroe, North Carolina. He led an armed rebellion down there. He kidnapped a white couple, and he fled to Cuba for refuge, from where he runs a thing curiously called Radio Free Dixie, broadcasting to the Negroes on how to make bombs and so forth. Now, this booklet here that I have was published before the rioting in Watts. And ladies and gentlemen, this is available from us in the packet. You read it and decide for yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, if this is not the blueprint for Watts and Cleveland and Chicago. Here it all is, tells them exactly what to do. You know what the most important thing he says to do is? He says you got to keep practicing the way they are, a little here and a little there, for the day when you can strike with Mau Mau terrorism all over the United States. And to do it, he says you've got to have one element that will absolutely destroy the white man. He says the white man has become soft. And I think he's right about this. I think the Negroes in the ghetto are tough. They're forced to do degrading, menial, hard physical labor. And they're in good, tough physical shape. Every time I go to jail, it's hard to survive. They're rough. And when I go out on the streets and I see these guys with their hair in their eyes all slinking around, a bunch of peace creep white guys, they look like girls. And they think it's bad and naughty to fight. They're ashamed to fight. They're scared to fight. Negroes aren't scared. They're not scared of knives. They're not scared of any kind of violence, because they, every Friday and Saturday night, they cut each other up for practice. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this guy puts this thing out, and you know what he says is necessary to completely terrorize all you white people? He says you depend on technocracy, on all your technology, most of all on electricity. All over the Congo, all over the Portuguese Angola, wherever the terrorists tried to take over, the first thing they tried to get were the power stations. Because if they could black out a place in the night, in the darkness, the terror would be complete. It would be impossible to fight them. We would be shooting our own people. This was the technique. Black the place out. Now, let me tell you something amazing about this book, The Crusader. It comes out every month or so by this guy Williams. He can't get it directly into the United States, so he sends it through Canada. And on the back here, it tells where you can get it, this little magazine here, in Canada. You can get it through Mrs. Ann, remember this name, Mrs. Ann Olson, 21 Ellis Gardens, Toronto 3, Ontario, Canada. This is where you can get this booklet telling about how to terrorize the white people by shutting off the electricity. Do you know where Mr. Olson works? Sir Adam Beck Power Plant, where the power failed and blacked out almost a quarter of the United States and all northeastern section of Canada. I'm aware that this is a hard thing to believe. Right after it happened in the northeast, it happened in the southeast, it happened in the northwest, it's happened all over the country. They're just checking to be sure they can do it, and they can. Ho, 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 ho. Well, those of you who are ho-ho-hoing, I think you'll find a lot of the audience are doing a little studying. And when they get done, they'll be wondering why you guys are ho-ho-hoing, just like me. This has happened in country after country all over the world. And you know what they're doing? The main element that they have to do in order to pull off this terrorism, the first thing they got to, I hate to sound like a bircher, but I'm going to have to. The first thing that's necessary in order to pull off their terrorism, ladies and gentlemen, is to destroy the police. So all over this country, you hear these people are making a battle cry out of the word police brutality. Anytime a police officer arrests a black man for anything, police brutality, police brutality. That's all we hear. And meanwhile, these honest citizens, these poor oppressed people that are being brutalized by these terrible cops are plotting to destroy the police. Lock, stock, and barrel. Here is a booklet. This one is not available, by the way. We are printing it. I haven't got it available yet. We just got it. This is a document put out by the Internal Security Subcommittee of the United States Senate with captured communist documents showing black mobs taking over and killing the anti-riot forces to stop of the police force. They're out to get the police. And although I have difficulties with the police, I always cooperate with them, and I find most of them are pretty decent guys trying to... I don't give a damn what you people think. The cops are doing a hell of a good job. They're up against terrific odds. They're not getting paid, and somebody ought to back them up, even if it's only me. But instead of that, what do you find? The communists and most of these Jewish love groups and all these people, these subversive people, attacking your police forces because it's all that stands between you and safety. That's all that protects you from this communist terrorism. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wind up with the final worldwide picture and try to make it clear enough to you to see why, eventually, what you saw on the screen behind me is going to become a reality, not only in this country, but all over the world, because if it doesn't, you are going to be destroyed. Let me show you a matter of history in a different perspective than you've ever thought of it before. When I got back out of World War II as a fighter pilot, as I told you, I thought that I had finished forever the need for my people and my kids and my country ever again to have to go out and fight another horrible war like that. I couldn't believe that it could ever happen again, such a terrible war. Well, up in China, right, no sooner I got home than in China, a guy rose up by the name of Mao Zedong. Now, some of you young folks are too young to remember this. Mao Zedong rose up in China, and do you know what happened, ladies and gentlemen? All these people went all over the country, these people that believe that there's no communist threat and we shouldn't believe it. Now listen to this. They told us that Mao Zedong wasn't a communist. He couldn't be a communist. He was an agrarian reformer. Do you know who told us that? Dean Acheson, the president, Walter Lippmann, all the great pundits and geniuses of your country that are now telling you, for instance, that Rockwell is a bigot and a no-good and Welch is an extremist and a crazy man and so forth. All these same people said Mao Zedong is not a communist. In fact, he's the George Washington of China. At Dean Rusk, your president, secretary of state, got up at the University of Pennsylvania and made precisely that statement. He said he's not a communist. He's the George Washington of Cuba. Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, this guy that said this is now your secretary of state. Boy, how wrong can you get? I remember at the time I wasn't even a conservative yet. By that time, I was just an ordinary, I think I was a Republican by that time. I'd begun to move a little at a time. So I came back here, and here I am a Republican, and I hear all these leaders of my country saying Mao Zedong is a good guy. There were 26 articles in a row in the Saturday Evening Post, which has been bought by the Zimbalist Jewish family. The Saturday Evening Post printed 26 articles in a row saying Mao Zedong could not be a communist. At the time, ladies and gentlemen, I remember a bunch of nuts and kooks, especially one called Joe McCarthy, and he was saying he is a communist. But of course, Eleanor was saying he couldn't be a communist. And we were being told by everybody else in the country that he couldn't be a communist. So these kooks, I believe, they must be terrible people. There must be something wrong with men that will go around lying about a guy like Mao Zedong, trying to ruin world relations and so forth. So in the name of helping agrarian reform to help the peasants of Cuba, our government helped put in Mao Zedong. General Marshall went over there and boasted, he says, with a stroke of the pen, I disarmed 20 divisions of the Chinese Nationalist Army. 20 divisions we disarmed. We took all their arms away. Meanwhile, Russia was supplying Japanese arms by the ton and ton after ton to the Chinese communists. Chinese communism took over, and you should have heard Mr. Rusk and all these people be surprised, because no sooner had they taken over, Mao Zedong rose up and said, I'm a communist. I've always been a communist. He murdered 40 million people to thin out the Chinese population a little bit. That's a hell of a way to have an agrarian reform, is to kill all the peasants. That's what he did. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, you should have heard Eleanor. Oh, she says, what a surprise. How could this be? How could such a thing happen? Who would have thought he could have been a communist?
You
He was absolutely astounded. All these people were amazed. They just couldn't understand it. Well, now, you wouldn't think anybody could be took twice on this deal, would you? And yet, ladies and gentlemen, it happened again. The next thing that happened, down in Cuba, they had a guy named Batista. And you should have read the propaganda. Some of you folks may remember this deal. Batista Mr. Batista was a terrible guy, we were told, because every once in a while, every week or so, he'd kill somebody. He'd actually kill people down there. Of course, he was a Christian and pro-American and anti-communist, but that didn't matter because he was a dirty fascist who killed people. And not only that, but the peasants were oppressed. So in the name of the oppressed peasants, once again, we backed Mr. Castro, once again, Mr. Lippmann, Eleanor, Dean Rusk, Dean Acheson, everybody told us Castro couldn't be a communist. And by this time, I was a conservative and becoming a Nazi. And by this time, I was beginning to notice his record showed he was a communist. And I was one of the ones saying he is a red. Here's his record in Venezuela. He started a communist revolution. Here's the evidence. And yet all these top leaders that are now leading your country were once again wrong, just like they were with Mao Zedong. And they said, no, he's the George Washington of Cuba. So Mr. Castro took over with our help. He was taken to the United States with a triumphal tour all around Disneyland, I think he got. He was put on the Ed Sullivan Show. Ed Sullivan put his arm around him and said he's the George Washington of Cuba for 20 million people. He went right back down to Cuba and he held a Hate America parade. That was what he called it. He did cast every calumny on this country and he said, I've always been a communist. And once again, Eleanor was, oh, how could it be? Walter Lippmann was just absolutely appalled. All these guys, Dean Rusk, Dean Acheson, all wrong again. And all us nutty conservatives, haters and bigots, every one of us right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, they're doing it right here in your country to you, and they got many of you helping for the best motives in the world. Get the picture. They always pick an oppressed group. In the name of the oppressed group, they set up these George Washingtons who are going to lead their people out of the land of Egypt into freedom. That's always their cry, freedom. And so, by the way, I might point out, well, I will later point out their war cry. They take this oppressed group, in the name of helping the oppressed group, they set up a communist tyranny. All your leaders tell you they couldn't be communists until finally the day comes when they were wide open as communists, and then all your leaders say, oh, we're surprised. Now here in this country, you do have an oppressed group, ladies and gentlemen, but it's not peasants. Remember, in the other countries, they call it agrarian reform. China, agrarian reform. Cuban, agrarian reform. You don't need agrarian reform here because there's not millions of starving peasants. You do have an oppressed group, and it's black. Black people in this country have a rotten lot. Had I been a black man, I'd have been Malcolm X. And I have no respect for these hat-in-hand squirm-inners and crawl-inners and sit-inners and wee-wee-inners. I have a lot of respect, as much as I'll fight them, for Black Panthers and people who want to stand up for black power. Understand, Stokely's going to speak here. Well, me and Stokely, sooner or later, are going to face each other over rifles, but at least I respect the man because he stands up for what he believes in. Well, now, anyway, what my point is, the black man has a rotten lot. He is oppressed. So in the name of the oppressed group, they have set up a movement called, not agrarian reform in this country, they call it civil rights. And most of the leaders have read records that long, just like Castro and just like Mao Zedong. But you're told by all the people like are standing up here, why he couldn't be a communist. He's a preacher. He won the Nobel Prize. How could he be a commie? And I'm telling you his record of red affiliations is that long. I'm telling you that you have it right here on your own soil. You've had two strikes, ladies and gentlemen. One more and you're out because it's the last country in the world that can stand up to them. They're out to take over this country. I've showed you how they're doing it. I've showed you how they're blacking out so you don't know the information. I finally showed you how they've lied to you at least twice. These same people that are standing up here are people that are telling you now in Vietnam, we're just protesting. We're not helping the enemy like hell. When they go out there and do everything they can to get worldwide publicity, the American people are down in the Vietnam War. They are killing Americans, and it's treason, and it ought to be stopped. It ought not to be tolerated another minute. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if we can't get our people woken up, if we can't get it stopped, we are going to lose our country, the greatest and finest country in the history of the world. And the only way I know to stop it is with enlightenment backed up by the guts to stand up to these people and fight them when they need it. And our slogan in doing it, ladies and gentlemen, is that the white people of this country have got to quit being intimidated and divided and conquered. Let me point out, in the Congo, they got a black country, and they won't tolerate a white leader. Let me ask you this. What do you think would happen to a bunch of you white folks that went over to the Congo and started running around hollering, get blackie? They'd eat you, ladies and gentlemen. But you're supposed to let them do it over here. What I'm getting at is, in this country, the blacks vote black. The Jews vote Jewish. Only the white people are stupid enough to divide themselves and cancel each other out into little Republican and Democrat teams, and you got to cut it out. If they vote black and they vote Jewish, you got to vote white, which is why I preach white power. When you stand together, the majority is supposed to rule in this country, and the majority is white and Christian. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to fight to see that we have majority rule in this country. I thank you very much. I thank you very much, and if they'll pass up the questions, I'll try to answer them.
Would the ushers please collect the questions from the audience? You have a little slip of paper on your programs to write questions.
He says pass up the slips of paper so we can get the questions in here. While they're doing it, ladies, while they're collecting the slips, I got something to show you. This is just a little encore here. While I got another document here. Somebody go collect them. They're down there with the slips. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you a document here from the Los Angeles Times, usually buried away. You know, you have a lady here in California that's supposed to be the leader of the communist group here. This is the sort of thing that really shocks me that you don't know. You know about Dorothy Healy? Sounds like a nice Irish girl. Well, here it turns out Dorothy Healy's name is Dorothy Rosenblum. It's right here in the newspaper. And every time I start checking, this is what I find out. Well, now, give me some questions here, and I'll start answering. All right. They are now choosing the questions, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Don't wait too long. Let me have something to answer. Even if it isn't good, they get rested.
Ladies and gentlemen,
They can't hear you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Dr. Robert Wohl of the History Department. He will be selecting and reading the questions. Dr. Wohl? Here.
Mr. Rockwell, let me read the first question. Why can't I burn American flags as part of the doctrine of free expression of ideas?
Well, I'll give you two answers to that. If anybody had even tried to burn an American flag during World War II, anybody, any place, would have stopped him and killed him, and the police would have helped him. And the second answer why you can't do it is if I get my hands on you, you won't be able to do anything else.
Mr. Rockwell, would you please elaborate on the Jewish communist collaborations of Mao Zedong?
Oh, now they really think they got me, don't they? Well, have you noticed there's a little difficulty going on between the boys in Russia and the boys in China? See, the boys in China are not quite so much communists as they are colored nationalists. They've kicked their Jews out in Red China. And they're having a difficulty with the place where the Jews are still thick over there in Moscow. The problem is that whenever the Communist Party starts kicking the Jews out, it becomes nationalist. And then they're in serious trouble with world communism.
Do you advocate murdering Jews even though you hate them?
I do not advocate murdering anybody. I know what this is going to. This goes back to the 6 million baloney. Everybody has been told so damn many times, and I believed it for years, that 6 million Jews were murdered, that you just can't doubt it. That's all you ever hear. Let me ask you something, ladies and gentlemen. Do you ever hear even 1 millionth, as much as you hear about the 6 million, do you ever hear about the 20 million Christians that Mr. Litvinov and Mr. Trotsky, or rather Mr. Bronstein and Mr. Finkelstein knocked off? 20 million, they boast about it. Do you ever hear anything about that? No. All you ever hear is the war propaganda about those 6 million Jews. And that's strictly propaganda to get you afraid to stand up and mention anything bad about Jews, because right away the tears start running down. And you're attacking these helpless people. Well, I don't think there's anything helpless about the Rosenbergs that gave the atom bomb to Russia that's now scaring all you peace creeps so much. I don't advocate murdering any innocent person, Jewish, black, or anything else.
Go ahead, again, another question.
If the Russian Revolution was a Jewish revolution, and if many communists are Jewish, why are Jews being persecuted in the Soviet Union today?
This is right here. I have a clipping from the Washington Post, Friday, October 7th, 1966. Young Jews hail holiday in Moscow, and it says, thousands of young Jews danced and sang in the streets outside Moscow's great synagogue. This is not very often reported, but the Jews are doing just fine. The problem with them is the Russian communists are atheists. They despise religion. They're persecuting all religions, not just Jews, but they're persecuting Baptists, Catholics. Anybody who is religious is being persecuted. It's just that the Jews yell louder than anybody else. What's happened is the atheist Jews are persecuting the religious Zionist Jews. This is not anti-Semitism. It's simply a little family argument going on.
Do you communicate with the neo-Nazi party arising in West Germany?
I don't dare. That'd be the quickest way to kill it. All it would be necessary to ruin that party would be for them to find one letter from George Lincoln Rockwell, say, hey, you're doing great, fellas, keep it up, or do so-and-so. And they would say, now, you see, this is a front for Rockwell, or it's part of this big Nazi. They're trying to prove that it's a Nazi movement. In other words, the minute they do, they can't have their party. It's forbidden, verboten in Germany to be a Nazi. My people all go to jail. The Nazi, open Nazis in my group. I see Tuvim Friedman or somebody, Rosenthal, some Jew says he's just turned over the names of 450 of my people to the authorities. Well, he doesn't have to. My people are all open, and most of them are in jail for it.
If Playboy misrepresents your views through editing and exclusion of facts, why haven't you sued them for libel?
The answer is, ladies and gentlemen, they confronted with me the fait accompli. They were supposed to give me galley proofs. I was driving across the desert near Amarillo, called my headquarters to see if there were any messages, and they said that Playboy had called and to call Playboy. I called Playboy, and they said, Mr. Rockwell, it's too late to send you galley proofs. I'm going to read you the story over the telephone and tell us if you like it. Well, how can you correct anything over the telephone? So they read me over the telephone, and I tried to do the best I could, and a lot of the things I asked for, of course, they didn't do. When they finally sent me anything at all, it was page proofs, and they said, the presses are rolling. You have your choice. You can either stop the interview entirely, and they would have had to do it, or you can release the page proofs. So I chose to take the calculated risk of letting all that misrepresentation out, because otherwise I would have lost 8 million readers. And the hardest thing in the world for me to do is reach anybody with anything. I need outlets to be able to invite to get to colleges to speak, for instance. So I chose being misrepresented to get publicity.
Some prominent and non-Jewish and non-communist historians have stated that Hitler's legitimate father probably was partially Jewish, making him one-fourth Jewish. It is also said that Hitler knew of this and tried to suppress this fact. What is your comment on this?
Well, all I can say is that if the Jews are now trying to take credit for Hitler, then they got everybody. There's nobody left. They already got Christ and Marx and Freud and everybody else. I guess they're really trying to get horn in on everything. And I would say further, they scream he's the worst man that ever lived, practically the devil himself. Well, if he turns out to be Jewish, then they're cutting their own throats with this kind of propaganda.
You talk of the Jewish race. I have never heard an anthropological professor, talk of the Jewish race. Please elaborate on your concept of the Jewish race.
All right, sir, I'll be happy to do that. If we had a blackboard here, having been a commercial artist of some skill and won some prizes at it and so forth, if we had a blackboard here, I could start drawing faces on the blackboard. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I could not draw a face that any of you would recognize as a Protestant or a face that you'd recognize as a Catholic. But if I drew a certain type of profile with a big hook nose, right away, you'd all know what it was. Now, do you think you grow that nose, ladies and gentlemen, and that Jewish look by going to a synagogue? Do you think you could look like that? Do you think you could look like that by going to a synagogue? The Jews are recognizable, not all of them, but some of them. You can look at them, and they look like Jews, like Harry Golden. Now, don't tell me that this is not a group of biological extraction.
The evidence...
Oh, excuse me. Wait a minute. Somebody says, you know, Harry Golden, let me show you how these people lie. Harry Golden wrote a column up in San Francisco when I was up there. And Harry Golden says, I used to know Rockwell's old man, Doc Rockwell, really good. He was a pretty good guy. In fact, he says, Groucho Marx was Rockwell's godfather. Well, now stop and think. Groucho Marx is a Jew. My family was Christian. You know what a godfather is supposed to do? He promises to bring up a Christian. Now, how can a Jew be the godfather and promise to bring me up as a Christian when he's a Jew? And this is what Harry Golden told him.
The evidence you presented from the directories of American and world Jewry is fallacious. A person is considered Jewish by Jews when the mother was a Jew, regardless of whether they are really Jewish or not. That is, Apteker is not really Jewish. He is in the directory because his mother was Jewish. Please comment.
Well, all I can say, ladies and gentlemen, in many cases, the Jews take credit for Karl Marx. Whenever they want to show how intellectual they are, they take credit for Karl Marx, who was an apostate Jew and wrote a book called A World Without Jews and hated them and so forth. I have seen the Jews taking credit for people who have only Jewish fathers, or people, well, they claim Marilyn Monroe is a Jew. She didn't have a Jewish mother, and Sammy Davis is a Jew, although he doesn't look like a Jew. He looks like something else to me.
Why do you carry the tape recorder under your jacket when you speak?
Wherever I speak, ladies and gentlemen, I tape every word of every interview because I am lied about every day, every hour, every minute so much, the only way I can prove it is to have the tape. I have the complete tape of the Playboy interview. And any time any journalist would like to find out whether I'm telling the truth, I can present him with the whole interview. Anybody who says that I came here in this audience and said all Jews are communists or all communists are Jews, which you'll probably read in the paper tomorrow, I got the tape to show they're lying.
Now, this is a rather long one, but I think you'll want to answer it. The Russian Communist Party purged millions. If it is composed of powerful Jews, then it necessarily follows that the Jews have a cohesive, highly organized body in the form of the Russian Communist Party. In a like manner, you contend that there is an extremely powerful Jewish faction in America. But if they are so powerful and selfishly inclined, why haven't they purged you?
Well, they sure are trying. They just today tried to throw me 3 months in the clink, and they've been doing it every place I go. Martin Luther King goes all through Chicago tearing the whole place up last summer, and he doesn't even get threatened with arrest. They tell me on the national television they're going to arrest me on sight. And the sheriff says he'll think of some charges afterwards. I go up to his office, and he arrests me. Now they're going to try to put me in jail for 3 months. They try to purge me as much as they can. Mr. Cohen, the Internal Revenue people, sends 8 big goon squads into my place and just locks it up and grabs everything. I got no recourse. There's nothing I can do. I'm too poor and little. If you don't think they're trying to run me out of business and purge me, you ought to see. If we're going to quit, I want to mention one thing. I noticed there's one question that's been dumped here in the garbage. Somebody asked, what is the title of your book and where can you get it? I guess they don't want me to answer that, so I won't. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.